And now I would like to introduce our speaker for the evening, John C.
My name is John, and I'm an alcoholic. This fellowship is a constant amazement to me. You know, if you had the distinguished opportunity of seeing me in the life I led before I came to this fellowship, and have had the privilege, the rare privilege that I enjoy today, of coming down here and meeting you good people, and knowing that I can walk into this room and I'm with my people. And what's even more impressed that I was eating dinner this evening, the thing that really got to me, and it made my heart so full I wanted to cry, and I almost did. And that's okay today, because I was sitting at a table, and I had a group of friends with me. And I say that because they're friends. You know. They actually came for the fellowship and came because they wanted to hear me and to enjoy the glorious fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you had known the kind of person I was when I hit the door, nobody wanted to come with me anywhere. I had an adage in the old days. The old days, the good old days. You know, the world is a shitty place and everybody in it is a bastard. And I drank to that. I'm one of these guys who was very fortunate. First of all, let me explain this. But what you see, if you don't like, it's your fault. It's your fault, it's not mine. Because if it was my will that made me into what I was, that I am today, I wouldn't be this kind of a person. I have said, because I believe, that I've turned into the kind of person I used to hate. First of all, if you don't like happy drunks who are sober today, you're in the wrong room. Because I'm one of those miserable guys smiles all the time. And not only that, I don't understand the problem anymore. Now, if I'm with my people, you know what they used to do to me. It's part of the plot. You know them, those guys, and what they used to do to me? I used to call it, it's part of the plot. Now, I've been sober, and I've been trying to explain to my wife this plot. And she doesn't understand it. She's one of those glorious creatures that it's my good fortune to know and love many of them. And they call them Al-Anons. And I've shared a great deal with her. And I called the plot. You know, everybody's out to get the kid. And I had to explain. In the process of explaining this plot, I found out I was the plot. I was out to get me, and I didn't know that. Not only that, now, there seems to be I got caught in this syndrome when I first came into the fellowship. I didn't drink enough, you know. They talked about the yets, and I identified with these things. I didn't drink daily. I was one of these insidious periodics. You know, they're the worst kind. They're totally unpredictable. They stay sober as long as they can until they can't stay sober any longer, and then they drink. And then they drink until they can't drink anymore, and then they get sober again. And I really do feel that's the story of every one of us, no matter how long we waited between drinks. What our problem was not alcohol. It was living without it. And I didn't know how to do that. I was sharing with an Al-Anon before the meeting, and we were talking about anger. We're talking about justifiable anger. Justifiable anger in Alcoholics Anonymous is kind of like functional dishonesty. You know, it's okay to lie. you do it the right way. I can remember some of the good old functional anger, and I can't quite call it anger. I'm more in touch with rage. You know, this is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is something else, you know. You come in so well, like I did. And you people destroy all of my values. And the longer I stay in this outfit, the sicker I used to be. And I have to, the more water I become, the sicker I am. Or used to be. And one of the things that came to me after I'd been sober a couple of years, we were talking about my drinking career was delivered to me piecemeal as I got sober. There's a wonderful gentleman here tonight who he and I, on our last time out together, he got sober and came to this glorious fellowship. We had a little, I have to tell the story because he's here and it's part of my story. Because he came to me in the office and I had loaned him some money because his money was tied up in a divorce proceedings, and none of us are familiar with that, I'm sure. But I knew him. And he wanted to buy a car, and it was just a matter of time, so I loaned him enough money to buy it. It was no big deal, see, because I wasn't an alcoholic, and I had a good job, and I had a lot of money. And he wasn't an alcoholic, and I trusted him, and I loaned him money. And he came to my office, and he had a few drinks. And he said, "I got my divorce. Let's go celebrate." And obviously, if you need a reason, that's a fine one. And we did that. We did that. I woke up. I was sleeping on my couch. I did that from time to time. I like that couch. Oh, I got to tell this. You know, I have a beautiful home. And by the grace of God, I still have it. And I had it when I was drinking. We had just built it. And Al-Anons are... There's nothing wrong with Al-Anons. They're just insane in their own way. And one of the ways that my lovely wife used to get at me is when I would go to sleep just as peaceful as a little baby. You know, you're tired, and you've had a couple of drinks, and you just want to relax, and you come in 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, and you go to sleep on a couch. Because that's a good, good couch. But I used to wake up and I'd be so goddamn frozen. She turns the freezer, either the air conditioning on, I never could understand, or the furnace down to zero. And then she won't cover me up. And I wake up with a case of pneumonia and have to drink over that one too. Anyway, she woke me up at some ungodly hour around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and she said, "Your friend was in an accident. He's in jail and I think he'd been drinking." And I said, "Oh, God, why is it me? Why do I have to? I don't like these people in the first place. And why is it that I always have to run around with these guys that can't drink as well as I do?" He had wound up and gone to jail. I had to bail him out. And it's an interesting thing. I could talk about a lot of coincidences that brought me into this fellowship. And I've had many of them. My life has been the most fantastic adventure since I've been sober that a person would ever, ever want to experience. And I can share a little bit of that with you. One of the first things that kind of caught my eye when I went down to go down to the jail to just make sure that he got out, bless his heart, and I was cursing him every minute of the way. Having some small experiences with jails, I knew that it would take time to get him out, so I brought some books with me to read. And one of the books that I brought was a condensed books of Reader's Digest, those condensed novels. And I read everything I had with me, except for one story in that thing. This life story of Bill W. Now, who, in God's name, would want to read about a drunk when you're waiting for one? No way! Well, the interesting story is that beautiful car that he had bought. Our car, it was in those days. By the way, before I forget it, I have to tell you about, he did pay me back all of my money. Okay. But he took that car on a street that he shouldn't have been in and said he fell asleep and drove it through a parking lot into a chain link fence into a 15-foot embankment and had $4,700 worth of damages to him. And woke up beside his car talking to a policeman. Must have fallen asleep at the wheel. He came to me and he said, John, I found a beautiful place and I'd like you to come down and find out what these people do. And it's called Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. And isn't that strange in the world that we live in today that I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous? I had heard the word and I didn't even know what you people did. My father, bless his heart, was an alcoholic, and he had to die from our disease. And he died at an age younger than I. And I never thought anything about that. Of course, we didn't call him alcoholics in those days, you know. He was just a drunk. He was a drunk differently than me. I always use the expression that when I was alcoholic, drinking alcoholic, you know, and I can relate, maybe you can understand this too, but a perfect description of an alcoholic is somebody who drinks differently than you do. Because I don't drink alcoholically because, you know, you drink more, you drink differently, you drink more often, you don't drink Jack Daniels like I do, and on and on. My daddy drank beer, and he drank, or whenever he drank as long as he could. His time factor was somewhere about 3 months to... He would drink for a month, 3 months, and then he'd stay sober for 6 months, a year, two. And then he would drink again, and he had to die from heart disease. And I never thought anything about it, and I'm not laying claim that my alcoholism, by any stretch of the imagination, is caused by my environment. Not at all. I was blessed with a glorious lady as a mother. And my father I didn't know too well, but I never really thought one way or another about drinking because I thought everybody did that. Didn't everybody fight with their dad? Of course, we got a little violent from time to time, but it wasn't that unusual, and I'm certainly not going to point my finger at them. What happened to me is I liked liquor, or at least believed that I did the first time I drank, and I drank the first time at the age of 18. I think it's almost a universal truth. You know, if you ask a non-alcoholic, when did you take your first drink? They'll say, God, I don't know. You talk to an alcoholic. When did you have your first drink, John? I think it was in the middle of March. El Paso, Texas, and the Green Frog, and the drink was Southern Comfort. And it tasted nasty. I don't think I'm unusual. Since there's a few laughs out there, I'm sure that we're all researching, and you can tell us a little bit closer, perhaps, than I did. Where our drink was, what we drank, and so on. Now, I didn't like the taste of it because they tried to mix it. They tried 7-Up, and soda, and orange juice, and all that crap, until I finally had it. A taste of the real stuff straight out of the bottle. And I said, ho, 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 this is my drink. Now, I didn't like Southern Comfort. I changed it to a good brand of bourbon whiskey because, you see, my daddy drank beer. And I wasn't going to drink like him. And I wasn't going to drink like you, too, because I seen those winos and I was going to be one of those. So I went to the fine bourbon, which took me about 15 years to learn how to put ice in it. And when I got to the program Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd reached the stage where I could drop a little bit of soda in it, too. Oh, good old Jack Daniels. When I got to my first meeting, you taught me a few things on my very first meeting, and one of the things that you gave me that very first night, for some reason, I took home with me. And it rocked me to sleep. And every night since that, the very same night. Every night has been the same story. You told me something that I've heard a thousand times, but I never heard once. You told me that today was the only day of my life. Tomorrow would never come, and yesterday was gone forever. Now, if you're the kind of alcoholic like me, I forget that Charlie Brown cartoon. You remember that one? Just came out the other day. And I don't know exactly how it works. He says, you know, he says something about, oh, I keep one of the Peanuts cartoons, and this is my life, baby. This is my life. He was talking about, he said, well, gee, I'm spending so much time worrying about tomorrow. But don't you think it'd be better if I started living in the now today? And Charlie looks up and he says, oh, no, that's quitting. I'm still trying to fix yesterday. That's it. I spent all of my life fixing yesterday. I was so busy with yesterday, fixing it, that on occasionally I would get a little tired and I'd jump in tomorrow to make damn sure tomorrow wasn't going to be like yesterday, that I was jumping back and forth, that I never, ever wound up where I was. I was either there or there. And I never had a chance to find me. And you guys told me a simple little fact. You said it was, yesterday was gone, and tomorrow would never come. And get it now, John, because it's all you've got. And I tried it. And I still use it. And then I heard another thing. Now, I make a lot of people irritated with this one, but I gotta say it, because I heard it. Now, nobody said it. Nobody said the words. And the only time I hear the words, I hear them from me. But this is what you told me. And if you don't like it, it's your fault. You said to me, just as clear as a bell, that I'm never going to have to hurt again as long as I live, if I don't want to. And you gave me the choice. And I've exercised that choice. And so by the grace of God, I stand before you with a group of friends that I never had before. In a group of friends that I would never in my life would I have selected to stand here making an ass of myself in front of a group talking about me. Oh, God, you don't talk about yourself this way. I was taught this. We're a fellowship of men and women who share. Now, I don't remember. I do not remember ever anybody telling me, John, this is how you share. No. This is how you conceal. This is how you lie. And this is how you make sure they don't find out what's inside you. Because, oh, God, if they do find out what's inside you, they're going to hurt you. We're blessed with a large family. My lovely wife is here tonight. Now, if anybody has spent as much time listening to the profound words of wisdom that I have expounded with a full bottle or a half-empty bottle or a total empty bottle of Jack Daniels, one of the great things that I used to do, I'm told, is I'd sit my family down. Let's have a family discussion. And the only problem was, is I knew what I was saying, but they didn't understand a word. And I could never figure that one out. Until I got sober. And I got to thinking about the good old days. And I was thinking about the things that had happened. You see, you told me that if I wanted to get sober, that I had to do certain things. And I had to work steps. And I had to work steps for the purpose by which the steps were written. And that's a distinction. You see, you don't work steps to get the wife off of your back, to get the kids to like you, to get money in the bank, to get a good job. You don't work those steps that way. That's not what I was taught. I was taught that you work the steps precisely for the reason the steps were written in the first place, for sobriety, and some amazing things are going to happen in your life. And that's what happened to me. It has happened to me, and I have to stand here and tell you, that's what's happened to me, and it is good. I was sober for, oh God, I guess, a year and a half, 2 years, expounding and telling you people, my God, I don't understand what it is. Why I'm so lucky? Why is it that I'm so lucky? I came into this fellowship on my first night and I said to myself, oh God, why me? Why do I have to have this thing? I don't want to be one of those drunks. You don't belong in this room. But you made me belong. And I look and say, and have to say the same thing, why me? But I don't know why. But some amazing things have happened in my life. Amazing things. Now, when I looked at my life, and I couldn't see anything wrong with me, and you told me I had to work these steps, it tells me in chapter 5 that if you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. Now, I was given a rare gift. And I call it rare because I've never had it before, and I don't know whether you have or not. But I want to share it with you. I had the privilege of intellectually working steps. Intellectually working steps. And intellectually working steps. Until I thoroughly understood what they were and didn't know a thing about what it was that I understood. And I had a chance, by the grace of God alone, to go to a bowling tournament in San Diego and get caught in a saloon for 2.5 hours. And if there was a bottom that a person ever had to be, if there was a bottom, this kid had to go that through that route. I went through 2.5 hours of absolute, total hell. I watched myself go insane with a desire to get a drink. Watch myself go insane feeding other people drink because I couldn't have them. I wanted to clean up with a whole goddamn room. And I still had enough of that thing called rage that I would have tried. But one of the greatest gifts that was given to me was an opportunity to see. To see me. To see my past. To see the things that I had done without any varnish, without any rose-colored glasses, without any excuses, and I had to recognize that I was totally responsible for my own actions, and it didn't make any difference whether I was sick or not. I did them. And then I looked at this chapter 5, and it said, are you willing to go to any length? And then I recognized that I knew full well that the wife that I loved thought I did and had for many years was contemplating divorcing me when I hit the door. And all my life I tried so desperately to be a good husband. And I looked at the kids and they didn't like to be in the same room with me. And all my life I tried so very hard to be a good, good father. But it's kind of like sharing, you see. Nobody taught me how. And all I did was take all this great wisdom that I had and used it. With my own willfulness, I had managed to destroy the very same thing that I wanted so desperately to treasure. And so I had to look at my life and recognize coldly that what I had, I didn't have. What I had, I couldn't keep. And I didn't want it back. Because if I got it back, It would mean to me that I would get it back on my terms, and frankly, my terms didn't work. I'd like to make it as clear as I can. Now, today I'm married to the same lady, but I'm not married to the same lady. She is an entirely different woman. I still have the same children, but they're not the same children. And I didn't do anything for this, because I was totally convinced this. You hear in the program many, many times, I'm going to get back this. I want to get back, like, my self-respect. God saved me from getting back my self-respect. I wouldn't take that crap with me anywhere. Give me what you gave me, the self-respect I have today, which is new. I never had this thing before in my life. If I had to figure out what self-respect was, I'd go down and create it. Like I used to. You know, when you come into this program without a God, it is funny. One of the sweet Alemanis in the room tonight, she likes one of these things that I say. I came in without a God. And you taught me that there was one. And I came to realize one night, isn't it strange? Here it is that I'm running around all my life saying there is no God. Or if there is, I'm not going to have to deal with it until I die, so who gives a damn anyway? He's sure not taking care of me. And I'll say, God damn you and God damn you. What I should have been saying, I damn it, you damn it, know me. John damns it, because I was God. But you destroyed that. When I hit the program, I like to look at it this way. You killed me. I've had a conviction that almost all of us suffer from. Well, I never lived to be very old. And by God, I didn't make it. You see, I died the first night of I got into my meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And all I'm doing now is keeping the bastard buried. You know, and I started talking, and I wander around a little bit. I started talking about rage. And I'm talking about how sick we are when we can get sober long enough to see and be given the great gift. And I remember one violent rage that I went through. And I had to be sober for a couple years before I realized I had done it. Oh, I had been talking about it, but I didn't realize I had actually done it. You know, talking about the things that I haven't done that you guys did. I didn't know those things. You know, Christ, I was sober for a year before I found I had a drunk driving charge. That was entrapment and police brutality. It was an accident. It wasn't my fault. Of course, I was drinking, you understand, but it wasn't really my fault. You didn't understand the conditions. I never got out. Oh, God. I had the talking in a meeting, and I found out, good God. I came from a violent background. May not look like it, because I don't have any of that anger anymore. Thank God for that. You took it from me, and if you got it, it's because you want to keep it. My God took mine away from me, because it used to destroy me. Have you ever been there? And I can remember this one so vividly. When I was with a lovely lady who I married, and I was very young when I married her, and she was, or we were, attacked, if you want to use the phrase, by a couple of smart asses, and I destroyed them, and I put them both in the hospital, and one of them very critically, and I do not know whether he lived or not, I was being so superior when I came in here and saying, I've never hurt anybody. Hell, I might have killed him. But I've been talking about that for a long time. But I never realized that it was rage that did it. Absolute, blind, cold-blooded rage. But then I woke up after it. I saw these bloody bodies laying on the ground. And if you've been there, you know what it's like. You're gut knots up and you get so damn sick. And I've had to do that a lot of times because I've led a pretty violent life in my early years. But you see, I was very fortunate, and I got married very young. I got married to my high school sweetheart. And we had a baby. And I was given the little baby. And I held that sweet little girl in my arms. And I looked at her and my heart got full with an emotion that I didn't know I had. And I really don't know what it was. Or I certainly didn't then. And I wanted to take care of this little baby, and I wanted to do the right things for her. And I realized that where I was going wasn't going to be right. And I had to change my life because I wanted to take care of it. I wanted to be a good father, and I wanted to be a good husband. And I tried so desperately to do that. So I dropped my friends, all of those good friends that I had. And I went into the business world. And I was like most of us. God, we have a talent for survival. We can do more work in less time than anybody I've ever seen. And I was good at it. I was very good at it. I had a lot of promotions. I got into the big time. I would have to mention, of course, that I was periodic. And so we had four more little girls. And I had a full house, five. Five sweet little babies and a lovely wife who didn't understand what was happening. She didn't understand what was happening. Because I was doing a lot of entertaining. Everybody in the construction business drinks. I don't care what your trade is. You hit the door of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first thing you say, well, you don't understand. Everybody there drinks. You know, if you're a teacher, all school teachers drink. If you're in construction, everybody out there drinks. Musicians, you name them, housewives, we all drink. That's where the problem is. If I wasn't one of those, I could. It's always because of our environment that I drank because I had a disease and I didn't know it then. But you see, my wife didn't understand that. She never graduated from high school. One of her great glories was the fact that she signed up in the middle of her senior year with straight A's. And that impressed me, and it impressed her, and that was the closest thing she had to a diploma, and that bothered a great deal. And we would talk, what little ways that I knew how to talk. And she was concerned about all the things that was happening. She didn't know about business worlds, and she didn't know about these big deals that you had to put together. She didn't know about these parties that you had to go to. And she didn't understand that you had to drink to do these things. She had no idea in the world that you had to close a big deal over six martinis. It's only because I outdrank the bastard that I got his signature on that contract. Well, I'll tell you, if it wasn't for my drinking, and I'm telling the story, the biggest deal I got was after I lost it. The biggest deal I got was after I lost it. I was sitting in his office, and I lost this multi-million-dollar deal. And I said, oh, shit. And he pulled out a bottle, he said, it looks at the clock, and he said, 5 o'clock, and he pulled out a bottle, and he set it down there. And he said, I'll have a drink. Do you want one? And I said, well. He says, I take mine straight. He's waiting for the little kid to duck down and say, ooh. And I said, I don't drink it any other way. 7 drinks later, or I think, who counts? I had his signature on the contract. One of the biggest deals I ever closed in my life, and I used to have to use that as, this is it, baby. This is how I can handle these people. I could outdrink any man. Well, my wife didn't understand that. And I remember one time, I come home very late. And that's what it was, too. Maybe you can relate to this one. Did you ever have something good? Something really good going for you? And it knotted your guts up inside and you didn't know what to do with it. And you stayed away. Because if you went there too often, it would get worse. And you'd lose this beautiful thing. And that's what it was with my house. I stayed away because I was afraid to be there. It was too good and I didn't know how to handle that. There's one thing in the world. I claim that there's one thing in the world worse for an alcoholic than bad times. It's good times. Called impending doom. Oh, it's watch out! Watch out for that big cloud! For Christ's sake, you're going to fall off and wow! Nobody says enjoy it. Oh, beware! Watch out! Horseshit. Because this I found out. I stayed away from the good times. I was terrified from them. I didn't understand this thing. I didn't know why I did it. I didn't know why. I loved those children. I was trying so hard to do the right thing. God, if there's a universal characteristic in alcoholics, and Al-Anons too, probably. I don't know that, but if there is a universal characteristic of us drunks, it's this. None of us ever try to do anything bad just to do it bad. We try so goddamn hard to do it right. And it didn't come out that way, so we tried a little bit harder to fix it and a little bit harder to fix it. And pretty soon the whole damn thing fall down and we pick it up and start putting it back together again. And fight on and on and on to get it right this time. This time we're going to get it right. Oh, God. I don't have to do that anymore. But I sure was scared of this one. And I drank. I drank over it because there was a big, big wheel. And the next promotion's going to be mine, and I'm going to have the branch office. Going to go into another state, and it terrified her. It was bad enough for her to have to have left her mother. But here she is, married to some tycoon, so-called, if you listen to all my words of wisdom. And it scared her. We had built a new home. And that scared her. And she talked to me one night. And she says, I don't understand what's happening. And I'm concerned about it. And not knowing how to share. Because I was never taught. I told her, don't worry about it. Everything's going to be okay. You know, I've got to do a little drinking for my business. I've got to do a little entertaining for my business. But I've got to do these things. But don't worry about it. Everything's going to be okay. And that was all covered up with the crap that I was taught. Don't tell her, for Christ's sake, you love her. Oh, don't tell her that you stay away because you can't stand the good times. Don't tell her those things because she'll have a hold over you. You gotta be careful of this stuff. It was not long, very shortly after that, that I was out of town and I got a phone call from my best friend. And he said that you wife has committed suicide. And I said, why me? I've tried so hard to do the right thing, to be a good father, and to be a good husband. Then why did this have to happen? If there is a son of a bitch that needed to go down, it should have been me. And then as one of the blessings of my life occurred, and they dropped the curtain, and I woke up, and it was telling me how they got me there. I woke up in a straitjacket, and they were sewing on my hands because of some cuts that had incurred there. They were laughing and joking about the little bastard that took 8 of them to put them in it, in an apartment building that I virtually destroyed. Rage, anger, and why me? Because I had emotions in me and I didn't know what to do with them. And I'm in this place with the bars on the doors and they're peeking at me through that crappy little window. And if you've ever been there, you know how neat that is. And I'm thinking about my little babies. I got 5 of them, and they're all alone. Then somebody's got to take care of them, and by God, the only one in the world who can do it is me. Because I can do it right this time. I won't make those mistakes anymore. But here we are, baby. You know, I had to deal with a psychiatrist. We got a place down in Southern California is where this occurred. Southern California, it's kind of like Agnew. They call it Camarillo. It's a nut house where they get to keep you for a long time. And that's where I was going to go. But whoa, I'll tell you, are we survivors? Can we do it? It's 48 hours after I got out of that straitjacket. I was home taking care of my kids. They sent word to the hospital that they didn't need me at my place of employment anymore. And that was all right, because I didn't need them either. So I came to Northern California. And I'm going to show you, by God, I'll show you, because I'm going to be the best father. I'm going to be the best mother. And if you think this kid is ever going to get married again, you got another thing coming. And I swear it was. Except I ran across the problem. And I want to share that problem with you, because I brought her here with me tonight. You see, it was my good fortune. As time passed. And I proved my point, by the way. I was the best damn father you'd ever want to see. And mother. And oh, what a cook I turned out to be. But I had a blind date. I was going to hire some lady to be my secretary. But since I didn't really want to hire somebody I hadn't seen, I suggested that we go out for dinner. Had a little drinky poo. And she said, okay. And I met the lady. She had the same problem I had. And she didn't want to get married again. She was already the best damn husband and mother of her 2 children. And she had a good job. And she didn't like the same things I thought and liked the same things I thought. And I couldn't hire her. because I didn't believe that people should do that thing, those things with employees. So I married her. I had to take care of her. I want that perfectly clear. I had to take care of her. The kid was out on the street. She had already quit her job. And of course, the big things that she had going for her is, of course, that she had a boy, a girl, a car, and a television set. And they were all mine with her. And I accepted the challenge because, you know, this girl should not have been loose. Someone would have taken advantage of her. And so I decided to marry her. Even though it scared me deep down in my gut. I want to tell you this. If you'd done what I had done, and you'd gone through what I had gone, and you realized for the second time in your life that everything you've done has been wrong, you decide to change you. And that's what I did. I became another human being, an entirely different person. Except for one basic fact. You see, the first time when I looked at that little tiny baby and I realized the world of violence that I was in, I had dropped because I couldn't do that anymore. And I had to give up the fighting. And I was good at that. I had to give up the rage, the anger, and things like that. And I did the only thing I could do, what every self-respecting alcoholic does. You stop them. You don't get rid of them. How in the hell do you get rid of them? You just poke them down there a little bit further. And up comes up something else. It's not always good. And that's what I did this time, because you see, I wanted so desperately to be a good father and a good husband. And I wasn't going to make the same mistakes again. My God, I don't want to do that again. So I changed me. The only way I knew how. I stopped more. Down on top of what was already down. That may not sound like much to you, but my whole life was built on that. Me fixing me. And when I got here, you told me I couldn't do that. That you had something, a means by which I can be repaired. With the same body, I've done a whole bunch of new things. And that's what I have today. I have new things. I have nothing back. Because I never tried to get anything back. The fact that my wife and I were staying together is only due to our mutual insanity. When I hit the door, there's no logic reason, no logical reason in the world why we should have been remained married. Except for the greatest logic of all. I was an alcoholic and she was an Al-Anon. And boy, who likes a track. Or opposites. Whatever, it doesn't make any difference. And I've had some glorious things occur since I've gotten sober. Fantastic things, and I call them, if you want to use the word, miracles. I don't believe in that. I call it the law. The law of the God of my understanding, because you gave me one, and I didn't have one. When I hit the door, I had no God. You told me to build on a solid foundation. And since I objected to the word God, I used the word rock for my God. And if you've ever prayed to a rock, you better be sincere. difficult because you have a tendency to laugh at yourself. I fell in love. I fell in love with this outfit. And I fell in love with a man in this program. Head over heels in love with this man. He's a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he has a group of tapes. And I fell in love with those things. I absolutely went insane over those tapes. I had a set of six of them. Hour and a half of each total. That's a bunch of hours. I went back to work. Same job I always had, or since I've been in, basically, the last 10 years of Northern California, preceding coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had a tape recorder, and I had his tapes, and I listened to those things 24 hours a day, seemingly. On the way to work, at lunch, whenever nobody was looking, I put the plug in my ear. On the way home, going to bed, Peggy said, for Christ's sake, it's growing out of your arm or your ear. Go to the restaurants and people were trying to see what kind of rock music I was listening to. We had the great privilege of meeting the gentleman. And he's beautiful. God, is he beautiful. Many of you know him. His name's Chuck. Bless his heart. Chuck C. Peggy walked up. Damn her. She was born knowing how to share, I'll swear. She was born liking people. And that's a tough one. She walked up to Chuck and she put her arms around him. Ooh, people don't. She's always invading personal spaces. She's doing it all the time. She put her arms around him and said, hi, Chuck. And he turned around and she says, I'm Peggy, this is John. And Chuck, I want you to know, you don't know it, but I slept with you for 4.5 months. And Chuck, in his dignity and his beautiful sobriety, he says, that's pretty good, wasn't I? Talk about embarrassment. No wonder I didn't want her back. I got into the steps, and I want to share a little bit of that with you because it's part of my life today. I was told you that I was given the great, great, great privilege of looking at my life in a moment of clarity that was a gift, an absolute gift. And I could see these things after I had intellectually worried like a little dog in a bone, one and two. And I had the chance of seeing my powerlessness. I had a chance of seeing my helplessness, not only over alcohol, but over people, places, and things. If you've ever tried to destroy a restaurant sitting still mentally and managed to do it as I did it several times, mentally in my insanity, you got to recognize, how enraged can you get over a post? But I managed to get infuriated over this thing. We came back, and I could take my first and then my second step. And then we're talking about three, and by then I was beginning to get a little understanding of what was happening. And in some of these funny miracles, where the law started coming out. My daughter, who was living in Nebraska at the time, and was sharing with her the thing that had happened in my life. And she said, Daddy, I want to tell you something. This is the same little tiny baby with my oldest girl. This is the same little baby that I held in my arms once and said, I got to take care of. What beauties there are in this world if we have the vision, the willingness to see them, and to accept them when we can see them. She said to me, Daddy, I got kind of religion, and we're in a Bible class. And a couple months ago, we decided that we in a group were going to select some poor soul and pray for him. And pray for his recovery. And you know what? We picked you. And that was just a month before I got sober. And then I said, well, baby, it worked. Long distance. It really worked. Because I got sober. Now, that's another one of those funny little coincidences or miracles. And I've got a ton of them, and I could talk all night about them. Because they've all happened to me. And I don't know why it happened to me. And I don't know why me. All I can say this is I am not one of these people who stands up in front of you and says that I'm a grateful alcoholic. No way I pass gratitude instantly. I am blessed. I am absolutely blessed, and I don't know why. My life is so good today, and it's so full of good things, so full of good things, that it's hard for me to understand why. All I can say is this, that early in my sobriety, things started happening, and I started getting some understanding of this God. And I couldn't understand what was happening, and I was talking to people in the program, and I was talking to my wife, and she would come up with these incredible statements like, well, that's the way it always is. You know, it isn't here that way. I've never seen these things before. Walking on an entirely different land from where I was. Christ, one of the reasons we got married, we thought alike. Ha, ha, ha. We don't think alike. She is alien. We come to the same conclusions from different sides of the world. That's all. We have a beautiful house. This is one of the reasons I didn't qualify to become an alcoholic. You see, I had far too much money. Far too much money. I just built a new house. Two cars. Had my wristwatch. Where the hell I put it? Had a wristwatch. Had all of the things. But nobody, I had more money at the bank than I ever had in my life. All of these things are reasons why I should not be an alcoholic. But I got lost in this outfit. But one of the things that Peggy did back in the beginning is incredible. Because she is very active in the program of alcoholics in Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous too, because we share a great deal. But I want you to know that the God of our understanding can do some of other amazing things and has done in our life. Some of the things I want to share with you I haven't shared very often because I don't care whether you think I'm insane or not. Because if I am, then your classification, nuts. It's your fault. We had this beautiful house when I came in. And the builder planted the lawn, and it was miserable. The lawn was full of weeds. Horrible weeds. They kept working on trying to pull them out. Peggy was out there. Digging weeds, she hates yard work. She's allergic to grass. She's out there digging and goddamn weeds out.
And I'm looking to say, screw it.
She's lurking on these weeds, and finally I came home one evening, and she says, I give up. And I said, it's about time. She said, I turned the lawn over to God.
I said,
you can't do that. Good Lord, you can't do that. She said, I did.
Well, what do you think God's going to do with the law?
So it doesn't make any difference. He's going to do whatever he wants to do. And you know what he did? Coincidence is all the weeds are gone. In a matter of 2 weeks. I told my baby about this one. Now, we've got 8 children. We've got 8 children. And I told my little baby, the one I'm talking about, the little guy, or the little tiny baby that I held in my arms, is living in Wyoming now. And I told her about this thing. The God's law. And she understood it. And they've got a large acreage that they're trying to farm. They're living in Wyoming in a tent. And they've got 6 children. And they're buying 300 and some odd acres of ground. And they're planting it. And she thought it was a good idea. So they dedicated an acre to God for his care. Now, I haven't seen it, but I've heard about it. Because people were driving for miles around. Just in. Because in the middle of the drought, they had an acre of the luscious alfalfa you'd ever want to see. And it had puddles of water in it. Now, that may not turn you on a little bit. And it may sound freakish, and that's okay, but it's part of the law. Because when Peggy and I got involved in this thing and we started working steps, I'll share another one with you. She was telling me about a friend of hers in the program of Al-Anon who was taking their third step. Now, I want you to know I've already taken mine. And I'm writing my 4th at the time. And she's saying that they did this. And I said to her, "But for Christ's sake, you Al-Anons, that's wrong." She said, "What's wrong with it?" And I said, "Well, right here in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says that you make this decision and then you act on the decision. You do it in front of God and another human being." And she said, "Oh, that's a beautiful idea. Why don't we do that?" And I hadn't thought of that. It's okay for you, but not for me. And the 4th that I couldn't write probably made a little more sense to me then. You know, I'm having so much trouble writing 4. This program's got so many safeguards in it. It says if you can't work the step that you are trying to work on, it's because you're not there, you're back there. And that's where I was. I had read it. I believe the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe everything that is I have been willing to use in my life has worked for me. Everything. Without exception, everything in that book that I have been willing to work has worked for me. So Peggy says, "Why don't we do it?" And I said, "Oh, shit. That sounds like a good idea. We'll do that then." So we took my beautiful friend, the same guy who brought me to my first meeting, the gentleman and his car. And I was privileged to ride up here in that car tonight. We used to call it our car. We asked he and his wife to be witnesses to our 4th step. I had a 19-year-old, he was 19 now, she was 17 or 18. I don't know how old she was, doesn't make any difference. She was in Alateen, and she wanted to take her 3rd step. So we took a day. We packed a picnic lunch, and we went up to the Santa Cruz Mountains. Not because God's up there. Good Lord, if you got to go to the Santa Cruz Mountains to find God, you damn well better take him with you. Because he's not up there. You've got to have him with you. But the scenery was right. Everything was right. We had a beautiful day. And on the way back from the mountains, we ran across that beautiful little glen. The trees, it was a beautiful day. And the trees were there, and it was a clearing in the forest. We jumped out of the car, and Bob and his wife sat on a log in the clearing. And you've seen these things, they're just like pictures, and it's indelibly engraved in my mind, and those great big streams of sunlight coming down, shining in the glen along the pine needle. And Peggy and I, Jackie, our daughter, and our little boy Daniel, held hands.
And then we kneeled.
And Peggy dedicated her will and her life over the care of God as she understood him. And then my daughter dedicated her will and her life to the care of God as she understood it. And then I did to the God of my understanding at that time. And my little guy, our little medical miracle, pulled out his mother's hand and said, "Mommy, would you do it for me?" He says, "He's far too young. Dedicate, for us to dedicate his will was not possible. But we did dedicate his life. The care, loving care of the God of our understanding." Now I want to tell you a little bit about this guy, this little medical miracle. He's a delight. He's the same little fellow that used to run and hide when I came home. This little guy was born with what we were fortunate enough to find out was learning disabilities, visual problems, and a mental problem that caused, according to the doctor, it was necessitated that he would take a certain kind of drug probably for the rest of his life. Because he was unable to concentrate without going hyper, so he had to take speed. He's a beautiful little lad. But he had learning disabilities of other natures, too. We found out early. And he had seeing problems. We found that out early. And he had been going to special classes, learning disability classes, since virtually the day he started in school. That's my little boy, Dan. As part of the law, as I call it. You call it a miracle, you call it a coincidence, or you can say he ain't. He don't make no never mind. But I know, and my wife knows, why? Because in a matter of weeks, I think it was 2 weeks, we got a call from the school, and the teacher at the school said, "Mrs. Carney, we'd like you to come on down and talk about boy Dan." And I would guess she probably said something like, "Well, he's not in trouble. No, we just want to talk about it." This was his disability teacher. So she went down to school, and the teacher said, "Well, Mrs. Carney, we don't understand quite what's happened, but his disabilities have all disappeared. And we don't know why. But you sure are lucky." We thanked her very kindly and said, "Yeah, kind of we lucky." So we took Dan to the doctor for an examination. You got it. And the doctor says, "Well, Mrs. Carney, I guess you'd call it a spontaneous remission or something like that, because the mental problem has gone too." Now, I don't know how many of these things you can take. But I've got a million of them. And I don't know why. Why I have had the privilege of witnessing so many glorious things that has occurred in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know that phrase, "Why me?" has changed so completely that I can look at you and I can say to myself and I can say aloud to you, "Why me? I do not know." After I took the third step, and these coincidences occurred, I had no problem whatsoever in finishing a fourth step that I couldn't finish. It went like that. I have a bear for a sponsor. He's miserable. You know, why is it? Why is it that we pick such dirty guys for sponsors? I don't know. And a sheer terror forces you to select the one person in the world. Oh, I don't want him as a sponsor. Will you be my sponsor, please? And then I got one of those. I got one of those. Oh, does he intimidate me? He doesn't maneuver worth a damn. You got to come out and ask him. And I said, I'm ready to have five. And he says, that's okay. And I'm taking all this great cunning, all the tools that I'm working for me, I realized, it ain't going to work, John. You better get your butt down there. And so I grabbed my little book, and I went to his office. I took the day off. And I marched in there around 9 o'clock, and I said, here I am. He said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to take five. He said, five what? 5 minutes? And I said, nope, I'm going to do my fifth step. He says, when? I says, whenever you're ready. Well, I got a lot of work to do. Yes, sir, I understand that, but I'm prepared to wait. And he tested me. Bless his heart, he did. I got to sit there for several hours. But it was okay. I was willing to sit there for several days or several weeks. Because what I had, I didn't want to keep anymore. And he said, when he realized that I was serious about this thing, he said, all right, damn it. And so we went to a restaurant, and I was fortunate enough to do mine in a restaurant over a bunch of cups of coffee. And I'm amazed to tell you, I would hate to say this, but I'd love to tell you that we just had so much crap in there, they threw us out, or that the horrible things burnt holes in the chairs and all the rest of that stuff, but I can't do that. You see, that's the first time I got in touch with the fact this, those same horrors that used to drive me insane, those fears and the jealousy and all those things weren't that big a deal. I found out that I wasn't that good at being that bad. I wasn't that good at being that good. I was just me. But the greatest thing I found out was this. I had stopped trying to become something. I didn't have to repeat the same mistakes because I found out why I had done these things. It says, some famous man has said, don't care. If you've got a lesson, if you've gone through something and you don't know what the answer or what the lesson is there for you to have learned, you're doomed to repeat it. And what I was given in 4 and 5 is the exact nature of my wrongs, the pattern that existed over my life. And I didn't have to repeat that anymore. Not unless I wanted to. And he told me about 6 and 7, and he told me it should not take very long if you're really sincere. And I went home and I read the book. And the book told me precisely how to take 6 and 7. And I did it precisely that way. And I believe to this day, the particular time in which I took my 7th step, that once again I was given a state of grace. Because at that particular point in time, I was without fail, entirely willing. For whatever length of time it lasted, whether it be a brief second, or a minute or two, or 5 minutes, or whatever, it doesn't make any difference. At that particular time, I was willing, with every fiber of my being, to have my God take all of me, the good and bad, to do with whatever way he wanted to do. Because the evidence for me was he could do an infinitely better job than I could ever do. Why is it that that people like ourselves can come into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And not of our own free will, although many of us think we come in of our own free will. We come into this place because there ain't any other place to go to. If you had a druthers, it wouldn't be here. Who wants to go into a room full of drunks when you're not one? Besides that, they're going to tell you you can't drink forever. Oh, God, you can't live forever without a drink. You know? Based upon that superior knowledge, the last thing in the world you're going to do is come into a place like this. But then when they do get in here, and things start going well, and then they tell you you can't manage your own life, and you're willing to accept that, because now you can look at your life and find out, oh, Christ, look what I did. Now I don't have to do that anymore. Armed with this, all this great, vast knowledge, we immediately set out to do it right this time, by God. I'm going to fix this, I'm going to fix that, I'm going to fix this, and everybody else will go the right way because I know it. I'm spiritually fit. And get out of my way, baby, because I'm coming through. Oh, God save me. And I've been my constant prayer from knowledge of His will for me, because it might be that I should have to knock you down. And behind God, you know, the basic reason by which I stayed out there without any God of my understanding and without any belief in God was the sure knowledge that I had within my gut that every problem ever perpetrated on man or mankind by man or mankind was by a group of individuals or a person who knew the will of his God. And I didn't want any part of that. Now, I didn't come out here to fix me, because I know for a total fact that everything I had working for me worked wrong. And there was no way I was going to get new things and be able to work things right. You promised me that God would do these things, and when I was given the great gift to be able to see that by myself I was nothing. I don't know why I'm so fortunate, but my life has changed dramatically. The woman that I'm married to, I love with all my heart and soul because I was taught how to do that. You see, I was taught what love is when I came into this fellowship because I didn't know. I had no conception of what love was. I used to tell my kids, I'd say, I love you because I have to. I'm your father. I don't have any choice. And I love her because I have to. And love was a prison. You didn't run around and give it to somebody because, God damn it, they all hurt you. What I was taught in this fellowship that I want to share with you because you're giving it to me tonight, love is a form of action. If you love somebody, you do something. For them. If you love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if it has given you the only good life you've ever known, then by God, you better do something. No deals and no barters. In the days of I love you, if, no work anymore for me. One of the great amends that I've had to make was to the lovely lady that was my great pleasure and joy to be married to. One of the amends I had to make to her was very simple. And what I had to do was tell her I loved her differently. I said, that allow me the privilege of loving you. And what does that mean? What does it mean to me? I don't care what it means to you. I know what it means to me. What it means to me is very simple. I love you, period. No deeds. No trades. Now, if you stop to think about that for a minute, if she decides to cut and run, and well, she should, I've lost nothing. I still have the love. If I come home and she's there, I got a bonus. I'm not talking about fear, and I'm not talking about anxiety. I'm not talking about anything other than love the way I understand it today. If she wants to fix me dinner, have I got a bonus. You see, I came into this fellowship and everybody all my life had been stealing from me. Everybody had been taken from me. But here, you give it away and there's no deals and there's no barters and there's no trades on it. And I learned how to love you for nothing. Just because I do. Now in the process of learning how to love you, you can't hurt me. You can't take anything away. You see, if I love you, and you love me back, how much you've added to my life. If you ignore me, you can't take anything away from me because my love is not dependent upon that. And if you really do like me too, God, my heart gets so full. And I stand before you, and I don't know if you can feel the love that I feel. But I'm so grateful for it. This I can tell you, based upon the knowledge that I've been given in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I shall, by the grace of God, continue to do what it is that I can do for this fellowship and for you, because you've given me the only good life I've ever known. And I want to thank you all very much for listening to me.